Out of Place, written by Fei Li, read by Kaylin Wrights. Chapter 2. Harry was in that pleasant state between sleeping and being awake. He was cozy, content, and felt more rested than he had in a while. The mattress shifted, and he wondered why he hadn't woken up when Ginny came in. More than that, he wondered why she was here. He opened his eyes and blinked a few times before rolling onto his back.
"You said you wouldn't do this anymore," he mumbled.
This wasn't his bedroom. It was too bright, the ceiling a cheerful white rather than the wood tiling of his flat. A chill had replaced the lazy warmth that had permeated his body. He slid his hand up and under his pillow, and felt a moment of relief when he encountered his wand. Harry hadn't left home last night, which narrowed what happened. His heart thudded in his ears as he slid from the bed, his wand aimed at the blurred lump under the duvet. He slid his hand over the bedside table and felt for his glasses for another momentary relief. Harry's foot caught on his trousers, crumpled on the floor. One-handed, he worked them onto his legs and up, taking more time than he'd like, and he spared a moment to button them. Kidnapped. Definitely. Poison or a curse? Yes, to either. Harry didn't even want to imagine the moments that led to him naked in that bed. Secure the suspect. In call, his wand jumped from his hand halfway through his spell. He nabbed it out of the air before it left his reach and swung it back to the suspect. What are you doing? The instinct to drop his wand was one the Academy had trained him out of, but it almost got the best of him. Someone using Polyjuice Potion to look like Severus Snape was sitting up in bed, their wand aimed at him, naked from the waist up. At least, that's what it looked like. Harry could have said that out of all the things he'd least expected, it wouldn't have made his list.
"Who are you?" Harry asked.
"What is wrong with you? Did something happen? A nightmare?" Snape asked. "If you're going to pretend to be a dead man, you should have studied up on this one a bit more. Lower your wand, now," Harry instructed.
"Something's wrong with you," the stranger said, and slid backward from the bed.
His wand never strayed from its target.
"Can you trust me long enough to get someone you do trust?"
"Lower your wand," Harry repeated.
"Send a Patronus, or allow me to. Minerva, Hermione, Arthur Weasley, anyone you trust," the Snape lookalike said.
His wand did not lower.
"Lower your wand and you can use the flu to call someone," Harry said.
The imposter hesitated for a moment before he placed his wand on the bed and pulled on his own trousers. His eyes never seemed to leave Harry's wand. He draped a button down over his shoulders and put his arms through it, though didn't go through the process to button it. His gaze met Harry's, and he just stared for a moment before nodding and turning his back on the wand aimed at him.
Snape would never.
Harry followed them from the bedroom and through a small hall that spilled into a cozy living area. He watched as he grabbed a handful of flu powder from a round clay pot and kneeled in front of the flu.
"Hermione," Harry said.
Snape nodded and threw the powder into the flames.
11 Springcroft Avenue, London," he said.
The flames turned a brilliant green. That wasn't Hermione's address.
"Can you come through?" Snape asked.
Harry could hear Hermione's answer, and a moment later Snape made way, and she stepped through. She glanced between them, then took a long look at Harry's aimed wand.
"What's going on, Harry?"
Hermione asked. She sounded as if she were choosing her words with care, and given the circumstances, Harry could understand.
"The first time I met your mum, what did she say to me?"
Harry asked her. "Thank you for taking care of my daughter, which I found dismissive because of all the times I took care of you," Hermione answered. "We met on the train. I was helping Neville look for Trevor. We cried in the graveyard on Christmas. You broke my favorite quill the day before OWLs. You helped slip me that potion into Lavender's tea. Anything else?" Hermione said.
She had taken a few steps while she spoke.
"No," he said.
"Will you please stop pointing your wand at Severus and tell me what's going on?" Hermione asked, taking another step forward to put herself between his wand and the target.
"Severus Snape is dead," Harry said. "You know this as well as I. We were there."
"No, Harry," Hermione said, and held her hands out in front of her. "We saved him. Drops of Dittany, general healing potions, Ron buggering up a healing spell and somehow strengthening it, and a lot of luck."
"No, he died on the floor of the shack. We snuck out through the tunnel," Harry countered. "By the time Madame Pomfrey got to him, there was nothing to be done." He lowered his wand, as Hermione seemed nervous.
"Have you been having nightmares lately?" Hermione asked.
She wrapped her hand around his and coaxed the wand from his hand. Harry let her, and watched as she set it on a table nearby.
"I haven't had nightmares in a year," Harry said. "You know that."
"No, I know you were having them most of last month, to the point of exhaustion," Hermione said.
He racked his brain. No, he hadn't. The last time was the night before the Ministry's Remembrance Ball last year. Snape watched the interaction, and he didn't move except to button his shirt.
"Where is this place?" Harry asked.
"Your home, in Hogsmeade," Hermione said.
"I live in a flat in London," Harry snapped.
"No, you live in a cottage in Hogsmeade and have for 2 years."
"We should go to St. Mungo's," Hermione snapped.
"I'm not bloody mad. This is wrong. Something's wrong, don't you see?"
Harry couldn't stop his voice from rising.
"I don't think you're mad, Harry Potter. I think you've been overworking yourself, taking the weight of the world on your shoulders, and you haven't tried to work through whatever's giving you these nightmares. I think you need rest, and yes, seeing a healer would do you well, so we can be sure nothing magical is going on."
Hermione matched his tone. Angry, Harry turned to Snape.
"What did I see in your pensive?" Harry snapped at him.
Snape changed from a placid, neutral man to an angry one.
"What used to be my worst memories, those that stemmed from and led to my greatest mistakes. Is that enough, or should I describe them in detail?" Snape said, his voice low.
"Harry!" Hermione called.
"You were in love with my mother. In which world does it make sense that we end up in bed together?"
Harry ranted.
"You love Hermione? I do not suppose that should pose an issue," Snape spat.
"Don't bring me into this," Hermione murmured.
"This makes no bloody sense," Harry growled.
He snatched his wand from the table and turned toward where he assumed was the entry door. It was. It took a few minutes of trying to calm himself before he realized that he was barefoot and shirtless on the garden path of the cottage, in Hogsmeade, on what looked to be a busy shopping day. Number 12 Grimold Place was dark, dusty, and seemed to have been left to rot since the war. A far cry from the remodeled home he'd passed on to Andromeda and Teddy. There was no sign of creature, and Harry wondered if he was at Hogwarts. He trudged up the stairs to his former bedroom, and was thankful to find some of his own musty clothes. He performed a litany of cleaning and freshening charms, and finished getting dressed. Harry sat on the bed and collapsed back onto the duvet. He was mad, or there was something magically wrong. A dream, maybe. A very lucid dream. There were potions that claimed to do that. Hermione seemed to be Hermione. She acted like herself. She knew the answers. No one knew about the lavender thing but for the two of them. But if Hermione was Hermione, he would have to accept that Snape was Snape. That seemed more than a stretch. Once you added the being in bed together part, it became fiction. Snape wouldn't sleep with him. Snape wouldn't turn his back on a wand pointed at him. Snape wouldn't trust Hermione. Snape wouldn't trust him. Snape was dead. Was it him? Had he lost his marbles? If they were Death Eaters, or other types of criminals in disguise, they wouldn't have let him leave. He had to be mad. If he wasn't, why would he remember a different life? Snape died.
Harry still felt the blood on his hands sometimes. He remembered the first anniversary of the battle. The ministry was holding their annual ball at Hogwarts and revealed the memorial. They tried to make it a celebration. It disgusted those who'd fought and their families. It disgusted Harry. He'd wandered the castle's corridors for hours, then slipped out through the tunnel to the shack. There was a stain where Snape's blood had flowed. Harry had returned to the Great Hall to find Ginny and, to his surprise, Draco Malfoy giving the ministry officials a piece of their minds. They made an intimidating and formidable team, surrounded by a crowd that egged them both on. The year after, they pulled the Remembrance Ball from the ashes of that confrontation, focused more on what mattered, the loss and the rebuild, honoring those lost and celebrating life. Harry had always respected Ginny, but for the first time he had respected and admired Draco Malfoy. Minerva McGonagall had woven her way through the crowd at the end of the evening to shake Draco's hand. They'd never be friends, he and Draco, but he would be a liar if he said he wasn't happy to see him when they ran into one another. When Lucius went missing, he was who Draco called. The door handle of the cottage turned the moment he touched it. He was still wondering if he should have knocked when he heard low voices. Harry followed the sound to the kitchen and dining area and listened to Snape and Hermione. After a moment, he backed away and entered the living room. It reminded him a bit of Hermione's first flat. Bookshelves spilled their contents everywhere. There were knick-knacks and framed photos scattered in the few empty spaces. Along the mantel, he spied dozens more photos crammed together. He stepped closer and spotted what seemed to be all of his friends. George, Ron, and himself at a pub. Ginny in a wedding dress clinging to Lee Jordan's arm. Luna reading a book to Teddy, with Andromeda smiling in the background. Draco and Ron playing chess. Snape. Snape and him. Everywhere. Here. Hogwarts. Diagon Alley. Restaurants. And what looked to be a museum. Sometimes in the background of photos, sometimes the primary subjects. They looked happy. Snape smiled and laughed. He hadn't known Snape could laugh. He was quite handsome when he laughed. Harry shook his head and moved on. He followed the path back to the bedroom he'd woken up in and flopped onto the mattress, sparing only a moment to kick off his worn trainers. The ceiling and its cheerful white paint weren't terrible. He supposed madness wasn't that bad. At least he had someone who cared for him, even if it was the last person he'd expected. He should make an appointment with some sort of mind healer. Perhaps the Malfoys could refer him to someone that would keep quiet.
Harry?
Snape's voice was gentle. He hadn't known it could sound that way. He stared at the lines on the ceiling.
Yeah? Harry asked.
Snape sighed. Would you like me to leave you be?
No, he said. Harry looked toward Snape, standing in the doorway. I didn't believe you were you earlier. Thought I was trying to goad you into getting angry. You became more recognizable when I made you angry. I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
Forgiven. Do you remember? Snape asked.
They were both speaking so softly that it seemed a surreal experience. No, Harry said, and looked back at the ceiling. Not what I should, anyhow. I remember you dying, academy training, making squad leader, dating Ginny on and off, and a handful of others. I remember remodeling number 12, and Teddy asking me to repaint his bedroom there every few months. Andromeda's heart attack, and her healing. When he turned his head, Snape had crossed the room and was leaning on the bedpost. Did any of that really happen? Harry asked.
Andromeda's heart attack. Teddy requesting color changes to various items is also accurate, Snape said.
I'm glad you're alive, Harry said to him, but turned his attention to the ceiling halfway through. Very glad.
As am I, Snape responded. Are you hungry?
I'm mad, not infirm, Harry answered. Snape huffed and came within his vision.
Shove over, he demanded.
Amused more than shocked, Harry wriggled to the side, and Snape took a seat against the headboard, looking down at him.
You're not mad, just confused. You have struggled with your part in the war for a very long time, and I must admit my inability to speak about it has exacerbated the issue. Hermione's inexplicable knowledge of Muggle psychiatry suggests this is not uncommon in Muggle soldiers. Our brains are alike, so it stands to reason we react similarly.
Harry closed his eyes. The moment he did, he felt Snape's hand running through his hair. He fought the urge to pull away, and submitted to it as another point of madness. Comforting madness.
We will talk about it. I promise you, Snape said.
Harry fell asleep, wondering what they'd talk about.